Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the South Bay Show, Preparing for Disaster in America, on October 21st, 2014. Voted Best Local Radio Show in the Daily Breeze Reader Choice Poll 2014, and we're very proud of that. I'm your host, Joe Terry, and the South Bay Show is brought to you by the Academy of Foreign Languages. If you have any interest in learning a new language or brushing up on existing language skills, you should know about the Academy of Foreign Languages. Located in Palos Verdes, the Academy of Foreign Languages specializes in the art of communication. Their mission is to provide the finest language instruction possible. They recognize that each student has distinctive needs and craft their teaching technique to optimize an individual's particular learning skills. At the Academy of Foreign Languages, they strive to create a comfortable environment conducive to learning. So whether you're learning a new language or would simply like to converse in your native tongue, the Academy of Foreign Languages can accommodate you. For more information, visit their website at www.academyofforeignlanguages, all spelled out, academyofforeignlanguages.com, or call 310-975-4133. That's 310-975-4133. You can find out more about us at facebook.com/The South Bay Show. Preparing for disaster in America. This is a subject that can never be treated lightly, but we do our best to make it interesting, engaging, and yes, even entertaining to learn the few key skills and primary information that could save your life, your family's lives, that of a neighbor in a time of crisis, or the life of a treasured pet. Our mission is to engage hearts and minds and build knowledge and skills to help you prepare for whatever may come. This show is a true collaboration with solid roots in the community and a partnership with Official Disaster Preparation Establishment. Our producer is founder and president of the local Manhattan Beach CERT Association and the Red Cross's community ambassador to Manhattan Beach, Mr. George Butts. Hey, George, how are you doing today?
Good morning, Joe. Good morning, listeners. Thank you very much. Quite well. Quite well.
Awesome. Yes, and you sound much better.
Yes, I am.
And with us today is owner, producer, writer of SouthBayByJackie.com, Jackie Balestra. Hey, Jackie, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well this morning, Joe. Good morning, George.
Good morning, young lady.
Well, this is a real treat for us. We've talked to a lot of professionals in the emergency management and emergency preparedness industry, but it's hard to get traction. It's hard to get that invention or that process or that program accepted by the establishment. We're going to talk to someone who's done that and more. They're very well organized, and they've actually made a tremendous impact. Very, very excited. Jackie, who are our guests today?
Our guests this morning are Todd Leitz and David Barrett of MySafe LA. Todd Leitz brings 25 years of experience in media, politics, and emergency services to his role as public information officer for MySafe LA. A former radio news anchor and reporter for CBS All News Station KNX 1070 Los Angeles, Todd has covered wildfires, floods, earthquakes, mudslides, and civil unrest in Southern California. Todd is a California-certified emergency medical technician who treated and transported emergency patients while working for an American Medical Response ambulance crew. In 2010, Todd was hired as communications director press deputy for Los Angeles City Councilman Tom Labange, who represents the city's diverse 4th District, which includes Griffith Park, the Hollywood Sign, Los Feliz, Miracle Mile, and Sherman Oaks. He began working with MySafe LA in 2012 as the organization's PIO and fire and life safety instructor. Todd has been married to his wife, Tina, for 26 years and has two college-age daughters. David Barrett brings 3 decades of senior management experience to the Safe Community Project. He has earned dozens of awards and honors for film and video production. He was the founder of one of the most successful software publishers for the Amiga computer, including the world-renowned VideoScape 3D now known as Lightwave 3D. He worked closely with Apple for 28 years, including authoring of key media-centric training and white papers for new technologies, as well as working to create a new method of editing film using personal computers. His work with Apple's QuickTime, Supermac, Radius, and Adobe Video products helped create a new industry. David has worked within the fire service for 12 years, including collaborations with the Los Angeles Fire Department for 11. He has developed training manuals, web content, videos, developed live drills with firefighters and children, as well as co-founding the Safe Community Project, along with subsidiaries MySafe LA and MySafe California. His focus is on changing the way people behave relative to public and personal safety. David speaks at multiple events around the country on the topic of fire prevention. He graduated from Immaculate Heart College with a Bachelor's of Music and has multiple certificates in incident command, emergency medicine, and media. He and his wife live in Orange County. MySafe LA is a nonprofit organization with a mission to teach kids, families, and older adults how to stay safe and be better prepared in the event of a fire, earthquake, or disaster. MySafe LA is the official fire and life safety education partner of the Los Angeles Fire Department and conducts safety training in LAUSD schools, senior centers, and recreation and parks facilities. David Todd, welcome to the program. We are so glad you could join us this morning.
Thank you very much, Jackie.
Well, you deserve it. It's quite a resume, and both of you. But let's start with you, Dave. Quite a resume in the tech industry.
Yeah, I think it was an interesting time. In fact, in some ways, one of the most interesting times in technology because it was such a bleeding edge thing. Today in technology, there are so many tools, and we kind of have come to a point where you really need to have the chops to be able to solve a problem. But if you have that idea, there's nothing stopping you as an individual from, you know, becoming extremely successful in the software industry.
Mm-hmm.
In the 1980s and 1990s, everyone was just trying to figure it all out. And it was a really, really interesting, exciting, and very frustrating time.
Right. And through that all, what would you say, you know, this is what interested me when I read about MySafe LA and what you guys do, is that you guys have really reinvented yourselves a few times in terms of career and focus. And that's really what it's about in terms of being prepared. I mean, being prepared isn't just, you know, go to the store, buy a kit, and you're done. It's a concept. It's a way of being prepared mentally. Can you talk about how you came up with the concept of MySafe LA?
Sure. I think one of the things that those of us who grew up in Los Angeles may remember is that when we were in elementary school, the local fire company would come around and we would go through this junior fireman program. Mm. The idea behind it was to improve the city's community relations between the fire department and its citizens, and to also widely expand the fire prevention initiative because there were so many homes that were involved in fire in the 50s and 60s. In fact, if you go back to 1960 as an example, every day in Los Angeles, there would be an average of 46 structure fires. If you look at the city today, there is an average of 9. So a huge change. And back then, you know, we all had a good time going home and inspecting our house and looking for those octopuses with too many plugs in them and all of those kinds of things. And then if we did well on a test, we kind of got, you know, an inspector or a captain, and those of us that made chief got to have lunch with the fire chief. Today, we are really concerned about what happens in homes as it relates to fire protection. Because structure fires back then versus structure fires today are very different, and I can get into that a little bit later.
Okay.
Initially, MySafe LA was kind of this gleam of an idea that I thought would be taken up by somebody else. We started supporting the Los Angeles Fire Department Historical Society and Museum in Hollywood when they first opened. They had very few resources, and so we helped them develop a web environment, and we taught them a little bit about marketing, and then we started building events for them to raise money. That worked pretty well. I think we raised $several million over a period of several years to help them. And in the process of that, education is one of those tenets. And we proposed the idea of, you know, let's bring back some of the education that was that's so important. But there just wasn't enough bandwidth. The building had to be restored. There was apparatus that had to be restored. Membership had to be developed. There were just too many things ongoing. Mm-hmm. So I began talking to Bill Demontre, who was the fire chief for the Los Angeles Fire Department at the time, about, you know, what are the other options? And then in 2007, he retired. His replacement, Doug Berry, and I immediately began talking about the same idea and came up with the idea of creating a pilot. My wife and I funded the pilot privately, personally. We weren't yet a full-fledged nonprofit organization, but we did it as a test in 30 schools, and it was huge. I mean, it was way beyond our expectations, and three things came out of it. One, I've never in my adult life been so affected by the energy, enthusiasm, and the needs of these children. It really had an impact. Two, it really substantiated my position on the education process, which was that fourth and fifth graders are not old enough to hate their parents. They not only love their parents, but they want to be the center of the family and they want to be the communication central. So if we can send messages home to families, to children, then I think that we can make quite an impact. And the third thing is that this was needed, that this was a topic that was really needed. So we built this pilot and went very well. And then we looked at how we would develop an organization that would not operate from a government point of view in terms of whether it be local, state, or federal government operations, but we would really develop something that operated from a business point of view and treat it as a business. And we built a board of directors. We built an advisory board. We created a 501c3. Got the right legal people on board and went out and started trying to raise money.
What seems, and as people visit the website, they'll see what I mean. But what it seems, though, is that there was a number of expertises that came together that make MySafe LA different, because we've talked to hundreds of people that have the information. They have the ideas about fire prevention and fire safety and earthquake safety and so forth. But there's a synergy here with MySafe LA that seems special. Todd, I want to bring you into the conversation, and I want to start at the beginning. How did you get involved with MySafe LA?
Well, at the time I was working for the council office of Councilman LaVange and had just left the office. Dave and I took a leadership course together through the Los Angeles Fire Department. I was lucky enough to be able to come into the class, and Dave and I were two of the first civilians, so to speak, that actually went through the Los Angeles Fire Department Leadership Academy. We kind of struck up a friendship there and got to know one another quite well through the course of the four-month course. And when I started to volunteer up at Fire Department headquarters in downtown Los Angeles, Dave said, "Hey, maybe you want to come to work for us." So it was kind of the right place at the right time.
Right. But I mean, how many people volunteer at fire headquarters?
Not too many. I was there to write a strategic needs assessment for the community liaison office, which was struggling a bit at the time, very understaffed and overworked and overburdened. And my recommendations were that they needed to spend more money and get more people, but and they have since kind of done that. At the time, I was hoping that I might be working up there in the community liaison office, and Dave in MySafe LA gave me an opportunity to pursue my work in emergency services and emergency preparedness and come on board with MySafe LA, and it's been quite a ride for a couple of years, so we've really come a long way.
It's a great organization. I mean, and what you're doing is something very, very needed. So let's start the beginning. Dave, tell us exactly what is MySafe LA.
The easiest way to look at what MySafe LA does is that we are a private fire prevention organization. We We deliver fire prevention and life safety services, and the objective is threefold. One, to create awareness and education within the community. Two, to reduce the need for time and resources on first responders. And three is to create a collaboration where we are changing the behavior of the public relative to those important issues of fire and life safety. I think people, you know, tend to think about protecting their home or protecting themselves kind of the way that people are think about quitting smoking. You know, the chances of your home burning are actually less than 1%. Most of us don't even know someone whose home has burned down. Yet, you know, so far in 2014, 20 people have died in structure fires in the city of Los Angeles. And, you know, the majority of them, 16 of them, without any working smoke alarm in their home. So those are needless deaths. So I think it's very important that as an organization that we kind of look at what's happening. And going back to what I said earlier, we really looked at and studied for several years, you know, the viability of doing this kind of a thing, because there's always people out there who want to get involved in the community. Mm-hmm. And what we did not want to be were, we did not want to be community activists. We really looked at the idea of what's missing, why is it missing, and how will it happen in the future. For example, the economic turndown that occurred in 2009, we were already kind of up and running, and we'd already kind of determined what we would do. So the timing in some ways was fortuitous in that, you know, even less budget. But what we foresaw and what we continue to see today is that in the United States, fire prevention is changing. And fire departments have more and more demands on them for accountability, for reporting, for doing things that they never did before. Emergency medicine is now, you know, the cornerstone of most fire departments. I wouldn't be surprised if the Los Angeles Fire Department was renamed in the future to be, you know, LA City Fire and Rescue or something along those lines, because 85%, even a little bit more than that, actually, of their calls are emergency medicine-based, not fire-related. So we're seeing this gap, and this gap that we believe will never come back. We don't believe that fire departments will ever get the money that they'd really like to have again. And so what we're focused on is we want to make sure that firefighters in any city that we work with, and we are working with other cities besides Los Angeles, but let's focus on Los Angeles. Firefighters need everything they can get, and we need all the firefighters that we can get. I mean, that's the primary thing to be concerned about. Mm. In Los Angeles, we have perhaps the lowest number of firefighters per capita in the country, right? The fourth largest fire department, but we've only got one firefighter for over 4,000 residents, and that doesn't even take into account the million or so visitors that are here every day. Mm. So with that few firefighters, and the fact that we're down 347 positions through retirement and so on, there's a desperate need to do this sort of thing, and there's no money for them to do it. And I think one of the keys to our organization is that we operate in a manner similar to a fire department. We focus on fire prevention and safety, and we take zero money from the city or from the department. So as an organization, we become a force multiplier. Mm.
This is the thing. We talk to a lot of people in emergency management and disaster preparation, and certainly earthquake preparation. And to a person, to a team, they will often estimate the preparation of the general public very low. In perhaps 20% is the number that we focus on. 20-80 rule. Most people, general population are not prepared for earthquakes. But how do you get to those people? They've heard it. Everyone knows the big one's coming. How do you get to them? You get to them through the children. That's how you get the information in there. And MySafe LA, you guys have realized that. And then the other thing we hear over and over and over again, all across the country, fire departments, in a way, as you say, are misnamed. It's fire safety, fire regulations and building codes and so forth have come to the point where, and sprinkler systems and advanced computer systems have come to the point where fires are much, much less of what the fire department does on a regular basis, but they aren't funded to do all of these different things. Of course, emergency medicine and EMTs are, but they do so many other things as well, like hazmat. That's a huge, huge burden on fire departments across the country, especially small departments, to be prepared for hazardous materials. Can you talk a little bit about the big picture for fire departments? You've already mentioned it.
Well, I think it's a very challenging time, and it's one that I don't think has really been sorted out. you have, let's look first on the positive side. On the positive side, we have much greater interoperability. We have far greater acceptance of standards and the ability to track standards. So the work that the NFPA has done, the work that the U.S. Fire Administration has done, and the work that FEMA has done has helped create a standard so that if you're in a small volunteer fire department or if you're in a major metro fire department, you have an equal chance of finding people that understand how the chain of command really works, how incident command management works, and so on. So I think that's a very important issue, particularly because now we are finding that agencies need to cooperate with each other, right? So if we're having fewer small incidents, we're going to have those occasional large incidents, and that means multiple agencies need to collaborate, and that means the radio frequencies need to work properly, and we need to have the same terminology and so on. And that's happening, and that's terrific. At the same time, and I think Todd's been a good witness to this, as have many of our people. In fact, most of our board is made up of firefighters.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've had the opportunity to really look at how the fire service is changing. And so on the one hand, you've got people that have been on the job for 20 or more years. And when they became firefighters, fire was what it was all about. And now the young guys who are trying to get on the job, they're EMTs, they're paramedics, they speak multiple languages, they have college degrees. It's not a blue-collar position any longer. And so there is that kind of culture shift. So you've got the older guys who, you know, didn't sign up for this, so to speak, and yet they expect to be able to live out the rest of their career doing what they believe in, which is saving lives and property. And it's an important thing that we often undervalue. But at the same time, there's less and less of it to do. We often think about some of the truck companies in Los Angeles, the area ladder truck companies, that their district actually doesn't extend beyond the apron of their fire station because they don't operate the way that they used to. And often, I can tell you, you know, we all ride out on fire with fire companies continually as part of our own training and as part of interaction, and because most of our people are EMTs. And one of the number one things that we hear from people when we arrive at their homes is, you know, why is there a ladder truck here? I have, you know, somebody broke their knee. It's a changing world that way. So if we look at the apparatus, we look at the costs, we look at all of the factors that relate to how long does it take for an apparatus to get on scene, how long are they en route, where does that begin? Does that begin in the station? Does it begin on the apron three blocks away? How do we track that? How do we account for it? That's a tremendous burden to place on any fire company. Yet it's the key thing that's changing all of this, and the word would be metrics. Metrics is changing how a publicly driven, taxpayer-supported organization operates. And it's one of the reasons why what we're doing is, in our judgment, so important.
It's incredible because, of course, you have this background with the tech industry, so you have a key perspective on the power of metrics to change industries and to move them forward into new spaces. Fascinating discussion. We're talking on the South Bay Show today with MySafe LA, Todd Lights, and David Barrett, and we're going to be coming right back to that discussion. If you'd like to join us, we'd love to have you. Please give us a call at 714-242-5288. That's 714-242-5288. We'd love to have your comment or question. Thank you. And at this time, we'd like to thank a sponsor. Jackie, who do we want to thank today?
Well, Joe, you know it's never too early to begin planning your financial future. When it comes to protecting your assets and hard-earned dollars, you'll want experienced professionals with a proven track record and flawless reputation on your team. Briganti, Cameron, Waters & Strong, certified public accountants and consultants, is the largest full-service accounting firm in the South Bay, and they are dedicated to providing professional services of the highest quality. The partners are South Bay residents deeply committed to serving the communities where they live, work, and play. They support a variety of local nonprofit organizations such as Skate Park PV, Palos Verdes Peninsula Land Conservancy, the Torrance South Bay YMCA, Rotary, and Pediatric Therapy Network, among others. BCWS prides itself on providing national accounting technical experience with the personal attention of a local company. This commitment to uphold high standards of excellence has proven key to their success and first-rate reputation. Their ultimate goal and reward is to see their clients achieve financial success as they define it, whether that means helping them to reduce their tax burden, assisting them with planning to ensure their financial security, succession planning, exit strategies, and wealth transfer. The partners and professionals of BCWS are committed to providing their clients with the expertise and guidance they need to reach their financial goals. For more information, visit the website at www.bcws.com or call 310-542-0011.
All right. So, Dave and Todd, this you guys have Dave has certainly painted the picture of the challenges out there. Todd, as the public information officer, what are the solutions that MySafe LA brings to the table?
Well, you guys both touched on them, and I think when MySafe LA began, the target audience was children, fourth and fifth grade students who can go home to their parents and their family and their little sisters and talk about being more prepared, being more safe at home. And that's been a key audience and a key demographic for MySafe LA to reach out through, also as you guys mentioned, technology, using storytelling methods that aren't just a bunch of talking heads up there and you that you need to be more prepared, but telling the story through video and finding ways to engage children and how they learn and how they become, how they're activated to go home and talk to their parents. Because in Los Angeles, you've got a very, and it's not a unique situation here, but it's a challenging situation in that you've got people from all over the world, immigrant families who don't speak English at home. But the children, we know they speak at least some English because they're at a Los Angeles Unified School District school. And that's where we've been operating mostly because they are in many at-risk neighborhoods where there is a high incidence or a higher disproportionate incidence of fires, fire injuries, and fire fatalities. And so those are the areas that we've targeted, places like South Los Angeles, places like the Northeast San Fernando Valley, mm-hmm. and Sylmar, where a family of four died in a fire in a converted barn where they were living, and there was no smoke alarms in there earlier this year.
Wow.
And so we've really targeted the children with our messages so they go home and say, "Hey, Mom, hey, Dad, I don't feel safe unless there's a smoke alarm in my bedroom. Can we do something about that?"
Right.
So that's kind of where it starts, where people have a tendency to get overwhelmed by preparedness. And I think you mentioned that, 20% of the people may be prepared. I like to tell people to try to get more prepared than you are now.
Mm-hmm.
Try to take it in little chunks and try to get yourself prepared in a way, step by step, incrementally. And obviously, the big one could hit at any time and then, you might be in trouble, but you'll be a little bit more prepared than you were the day before. Our big target now is smoke alarms. That's a big push in the city of Los Angeles and the Los Angeles Fire Department, and we're highly in support of that. We've been doing that for a couple of years now, giving away smoke alarms to people, allowing them to take them home, and now we're making sure that they're being installed in homes.
Mm-hmm.
It's really important to have working smoke alarms on every level of your home and inside and outside all the sleeping areas to give you that level of protection. And like Dave said, 20 people have died in fires this year. 16 of those cases had no working smoke alarm. And so it's a really cheap and easy way to have kind of an insurance policy to make sure that you get out of the house. So we have a junior fire inspector program, which has been very successful. It's a 3-visit to a school program. And we go in there, we tell the kids how to inspect their homes. They go home, they look at their homes, they find out if they've got working smoke alarms and so forth. They come back to us and say, hey, I need a smoke alarm. We give them one and show them how to install it. Their parents install them, hopefully, and the kids become junior fire inspectors and are given their junior fire inspector ID badge in the third visit by their first-in fire company. So it's a very exciting program for them. They're able to take that message, Fire Smart message, home to their families and defy any language barriers that you know, we might have as uniformed individuals showing up at a front door.
Right.
So we were able to reach into communities where, in some cases people are living in non-traditional places, not to code, 15 people to an apartment, people living in a converted garage, and we make no judgments about any of that. We just want to make sure that if people are sleeping there, that there are smoke alarms there. And we've been very successful in the places that we've been able to penetrate so far, and we're pushing that even further now. With an installation cadre of trained home safety inspection personnel who go into homes on request and install smoke alarms. And that's been, I'm surprised at some of the things that I've seen out there in homes around Los Angeles as far as, the age of smoke alarms in the homes, how they're mounted, how they're disabled, and so forth. And they don't cost a lot of money, but it's one of the last things people want to spend money on. So we're really doing a strong push to not only give away 12,000 smoke alarms in Los Angeles over the next several months, but to offer installation to people that don't feel comfortable with climbing up on a ladder and drilling holes in the wall and putting up there properly.
Did you say 12,000?
Yeah, 12,000.
That's our commitment. That's our goal. And we've already given away, I haven't really kept an accurate count. But
given away
is
the wrong word. Don't say given away. We don't give
them
away.
Yeah, probably distribute is a better word because we don't, like Dave said, we don't just give them away. We have people sign a pledge card that says they pledge to install and maintain it. And like I said, if they have a problem installing them properly and making sure that they get put where they need to be, then we'll come in and do it for them all free of charge. So it's very important to make sure that folks know a little bit about smoke alarms, where they should be placed, how to install them, and you can't just our research has found that just giving away smoke alarms is not effective because people sometimes will just put them up on a shelf. They just want something free,
right.
And if you give them a little education to go along with that smoke alarm, there's a much better chance of it being it put into place properly.
You want people to adopt these smoke alarms, right? Because the SPCA, most people think of the SPCA as an organization that protects animals, and that's certainly what they do today. But they were originally designed to find and eradicate animals, and they shift, and in their shift they now do adoption. So we want people to adopt fire alarms, learn fire safety, and learn how to change the batteries every time you change the clock, right? Fall forward,
yes.
Spring forward, fall back. Every time you spring forward or fall back, you change the batteries in your smoke alarm. It's just that simple. And
there's lots of new technology in smoke alarms. In fact, all battery-only operated smoke alarms that are going to be sold in the state of California henceforth are 10-year sealed batteries. And when that 10 years is up, you just replace the entire smoke alarm. You never change the battery. Still have to test it. You still have to make sure it's clean and you don't paint over it or put stickers on it or anything like that. But it's really a very low-maintenance item. And the battery is sealed and will last for 10 years for the life of the alarm. And there's another thing that folks don't know about smoke alarms. You may say, well, I've got smoke alarms in my house. I'm doing fine. Mm-hmm. Well, when I checked my smoke alarms just recently, I found that they were 10 years old. And when a smoke alarm is 10 years or older, it's time to replace it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's probably hundreds of thousands of people in Los Angeles, maybe more, who have smoke alarms that are 10 years or older and are not giving them the protection that they need. So it's a good idea to check them. You take them right off the bracket that holds them up to the wall. You look at the back, and there should be a manufacturing date on the back of the smoke alarm. If it says 2003, 2004, it's not giving you the protection that it probably could, and it's time to replace. In fact, I just replaced, mine are all hardwired in my house, I replaced 7 of them just the other day.
Right.
And it was quite easy, but, you know, I'm trained to install them. But it's something that's important to look at. You know, not only changing the batteries, but making sure your smoke alarm's not too old, because unlike you and me, Joe, they don't get better with age.
Exactly.
Well, and or myself, I've learned something again.
That's a good one, isn't it, Joe?
I never didn't know that either. I'm sitting here looking at my smoke alarm, thinking I got to get the stepladder out and check that. Mine aren't hardwired too.
Yeah.
So, I honestly know that when we remodeled our house, we did it so that they were hardwired. Oh, I'll have to talk to my husband about this tonight.
10 years.
Yeah, well, you have to think about when you renovated the house and when you put those in there. If it's over 10 years ago, they may be ripe for changing. Sometimes you can just tell by the color of them; they get kind of yellowed.
That's what I'm wondering. I'm wondering because we redid this house 25 years ago. But these look very new and very white. So I'm thinking at some point, maybe last time we had the house painted or something, maybe we replaced them because they're very white.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, that's good.
All right.
That's
good.
But it's a good idea for folks listening to check your alarms. And we are coming up on, you know, we're gonna return to daylight savings time. And, you know, if you think about changing the batteries, and even if your smoke alarms are hardwired, they do have a battery backup in case the...
You guys want me to test mine right now?
No, please.
Okay.
But I know, I mean, I know for a fact that all but at least one of ours in my house are over 10 years old. Okay, it works, Jackie. Thank you.
What it means when the smoke alarm is chirping, right? When the smoke alarm is chirping, you know, every minute, that means that the battery's dying, even in a hardwired smoke alarm. So that's the time to change the battery. And
if it's in the middle of the night and you have 3 rooms close to each other and you have to stand there until it goes off because you're not sure which one of them.
Yes. It always happens in the middle of the night. That's the rule.
It's a rule.
It's supposed to.
One of the things that we suggest to families is that they, if they're going to practice their family escape plan, that they do so at night.
Right.
Yeah, if you do it at night, do it in the day so you have that good idea. You know, smoke is very, very dark, and it's so blinding and so toxic these days. Dave, you kind of alluded to that earlier in your comments, that that you really only have just a few minutes to safely get out of the house before you start suffering from smoke inhalation. So it's key to have smoke alarms so that they will wake you up quickly. Even better to have the ones that talk to each other, the ones that are interconnected, so to speak, so that when one goes off down on one side of the house, it will wake you up in the back in your bedroom so that you can get out safely. And just to kind of, you know, expand on that, Dave kind of brought it up a little bit, but fires are so much different today than they were even 20 years ago. We have so many petroleum-based products at the heart of most of the things that are in our house, the couches, the carpets. And when those things smolder and burn, they create a much more toxic smoke than the more natural materials created years ago. So what you've got is highly, highly poisonous smoke that can kill you even upon one deep breath. In fact, I mentioned that family in Sylmar, and some of the arson investigators told us that it was almost as if the person woke up smelling smoke, took one, you know, frightened, anxious breath, and was overcome. So it can be so toxic and so deadly so quickly. You know, the flames of a fire usually aren't the things that kill us. It's the smoke, and that's why it's so, so important to make sure you've got proper smoke alarms and good coverage of smoke alarms in your home.
Wow, that's
our coverage. Our current initiative with the Los Angeles Fire Department is based on our theme of fire burns, smoke kills. Because people always think about fire as being the thing that's going to hurt you. And in reality, in fact, in in 14 of these fatalities without smoke alarms, it was smoke that killed these people. So,
right.
And it's something that we really often just don't think about. We see smoke, we're around barbecues, we're around the idea of what smoke is, but we don't think about the toxicity in a structure fire that Todd just related to. And it's probably one of the most important things that we could try and share with people is that it's not just having a smoke alarm. It's knowing that if you hear an alarm, to stay under the smoke, to get low and go, to not call 911 from inside your house, to get outside of your house, to have two ways out of every room. All the standard things that you want people to understand, do they have to actually think about those things. And once you're outside of the house, particularly if you have pets, you know, never, ever go back in until a firefighter tells you that it's okay to do so.
Now, Dave, we've learned a lot about fire safety in just this short time, but also you guys have not just Fire Smart, but also Quake Smart LA. Tell us a little bit about Quake Smart LA.
We try and look at all the different types of threats, and interestingly enough, LA is a cocktail mix of different kinds of possibilities for disaster. The one which we know we're all going to deal with, the one thing, you know, 1% chance, even less than that, that your house is going to burn. But there is a 100% chance that we're going to have a major earthquake. And the USGS estimates that the southern end of the San Andreas Fault is more than 150 years overdue for a significant adjustment. Last time that really, really ripped was in 1690. If it rips again the way that it did then, that will move from the Salton Sea all the way up to Lancaster. If you remember the Northridge earthquake, the ground was actually moving as a result of the adjustment. It was a thrust fault for about, depending on which recorder you're listening to, between 17 and 20 seconds. When the San Andreas rips, Los Angeles will shake for between 4 and 5 minutes. 1,600 fires are estimated in the Southern California area within just a matter of a minute or two. It's a slipped fault, so we're going to see the ground shift north in one direction, south in the other, by as much as 30 feet. So that's going to cut off power. It's going to take every freeway and shear it in half. So water, power, all the things you think about is, you know, just like turn the tap on or walk outside or turn the light switch on. LA could be without those commonly thought of and expected services for up to a year, and certainly without water and power for weeks, if not months. So it's a huge issue.
Now, Dave, it isn't necessarily the food, although food is important. You've got about 5 weeks, maybe 3 weeks. Without food of any kind, you'll be fine. But the one that scares us, Dave, is the water.
Yeah, water's huge. Water is a really big deal. And just to be able to go someplace, actually, you know, just moving around is going to be compromised. ATMs likely won't work for a while. And certainly credit card machines and things that you would expect to use to make purchases and things. So we tell people to think about all of the things that they do in their life, everything, and to have a plan for that, having cash on hand and not just, you know, $100 bills, but, you know, you're better off having $300 in fives, tens, and ones. Not that that's exactly the amount of money that you want to keep. But the idea is that we need to think about an earthquake over any other kind of disaster, because we know that for certain, at some point in time in our adult lifetime, we're going to experience a significant earthquake. And when we say a significant earthquake, we really haven't had one since the beginning of the century. We have not.
In fact, there's a lot of people in Los Angeles that have never experienced a major quake at all. A lot of the kids we talk to, they were just a twinkle in the eye back when the Northridge quake hit.
94. I talked to a lot of kids who think they're adults, and it hadn't happened yet.
That's absolutely right. So QuakeSmart is all about earthquake readiness, and it includes a couple of different aspects. One, the typical things that you might think about relative to preparedness and then survival afterwards. But the other aspect of QuakeSmart that's so important is that we want to make sure that all of the people who are involved in the process of earthquake recovery have a chance to be involved. And one of the things that we've done for the last 5 years is we design and implement a rescue scenario that puts firefighters into a school rescuing trapped students. And what's really important about these drills is that they're developed in the same format that the fire department expects, with an event action plan that follows all of the incident command format that they are used to operating with. We do not tell them what they're going to encounter. We force them to operate in what is called degraded mode, meaning that they don't get the resources that they ordinarily would. And they have to think on their feet. We moulage the kids so that they look like they've got compound fractures and cranial fluid coming out of their ears and all types of abrasions and injuries. And we position them in places where they might be hard to find. And boom. And every year we add a twist. This year, for example, at the elementary school that we did our drill at, we added downed power lines because there are power lines that go over this particular school. And so we had students that were not injured, but they were trapped behind power lines and there was water on the ground. So the first in engine company, as they did their size up, they were all of a sudden trying to figure out, well, how do we get the kids out of there? How do we shut the power off? And then a principal comes up and says, I've got 20 kids who are missing. So it's a wonderful way for the school administrators to practice their incident command capabilities and search capabilities. The fire department gets to practice with kids, which they ordinarily don't. And kids get to recognize the importance of what a major quake would bring. And it's one of the most rewarding things that we do, and I think QuakeSpot's one of our most important programs.
Awesome. Awesome.
Kudos to y'all. Gee, Joe, Jackie?
Yes?
Do we sound like we've just been through a cert class?
No, it's you guys, Todd and Dave, you're so well prepared. It's such a pleasure to listen to you talk about this topic because you really are very well prepared. Now, George, we're going to come right back to them, but do you have any announcements?
Just a few. This coming Saturday morning, Manhattan Beach will be having our own internal city shakeout this year. We will at 0900 via Nixle. Send out our texts and our emails to all of our members stating that there has been a large earthquake, asking for them to reply back if they are able to spend a few hours with us on Saturday morning to report to the four areas where they should. If not, tell us where they are. If it was a real incident, then indeed they would. We're going to test our communications. We're going to work with Neighborhood Watch and the police department. Block captains will be bringing in little orange flyers that are going to tell people that there's a gas leak, there's a power line down, there's water breaks. And then we will communicate them back to our command post, to our new command vehicle, and then on to the city. And then the city may, we're not sure what they're going to do with us Saturday morning. They may all of a sudden decide that we should pack up one of our areas and move it to another area to assist with some search and rescue. But that's what's going to happen this coming Saturday. And then we are going to move on to November 1st, which will be the first of three Saturdays that we will be having our next CERT class. Lots of room. I'm not sure what it is this fall, but... We're only about half full.
It's football, George. It's football.
Is it football?
Yeah.
Well, you know, we've done our November classes. That's what TiVo is for, and you can always tape them. We're going to put on our next academy starting November 1. So November 1, 8, and 15, myself. And a number of our volunteer instructors in the Manhattan Beach Fire Department will be putting on our next CERT class. The only other thing right now is anybody listening on 11/18, our city council is going to recognize the efforts of our training staff and our emergency medical responders that went this last year and took the class and have put in over 80 hours of initial training and have now continued that training through the rest of this year. And this next year, we will also be offering a class. And this is a class for our members that is at no cost to them. They may have to spend $5 a Saturday for 7 weeks to get a sandwich and a drink. But other than that, we as an organization will pick up the cost of the training for them if anybody else wants to expand their medical training. So that's it now. This next week, next Tuesday, we will discuss the shakeout a little bit further. We will continue to talk about Neighborhood Watch, its effects, the efforts that are put towards making our neighborhood safe, and what we were able to come up with, our shortfalls and our kudos. Of course, Neighborhood Watch, I wasn't home Saturday morning at 3 o'clock, but a felony pursuit ended up in front of my house.
What?
Yeah, out of Hermosa, with jumpers and over the fences and through the backyard, and I understand the woman was found under my truck.
George?
Yeah.
How many women are found under your truck?
Well, only one that I'm aware of.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and we had the neighbors, one neighbor, a two-story home, had they had the bird's eye view of Manhattan Beach in Hermosa. It started in Hermosa, on top of apparently my roof, our garage roof, the neighbor's roof, because there was another man who I hope she has given up now, because apparently he bailed on her. Mm-hmm. And he got away, but I think we're probably in really, 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 they're gonna get this guy.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I missed it all.
Wow.
I missed it all. And it's probably a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow.
So that's it for today and this next week.
Okay.
And the excitement in parts of Manhattan Beach.
Okay. Well, what strikes me most, Dave and Todd, is that you guys are ready. You're ready to take this, citywide. You certainly have the contacts in the city and the fire department. And you say you're working with other cities. How do you, as I want you to take this time at the end of the show, how do you take it to the next level? MySafeLA.org. People can find out more at your website. But Dave, how do you go to the next level?
Well, the parent organization is actually called the Safe Community Project. That is the parent nonprofit organization. MySafeLA is a unit of that. And we're talking with departments all across the country, actually, and one of the things that we are very concerned about is not outrunning our own supply chain. It's very important to be able to make sure that anything that we undertake that we're able to support. And in some cases, fire departments are saying, hey, we'll find the money for you or we'll pay you. And what we're trying to do wherever possible is to say, no, that's not the right model. We need to find a methodology of funding this that doesn't come from department resources. Although I would say that we can do with a dollar about 10 times what a city agency can do with a dollar.
Mm-hmm.
Just because there's so much more involved in how money is spent and how hours are allocated and all of the other overhead things that go on. As an example, none of our officers are paid, only our instructors, installers, our PIO, all the people that actually operate in the field, they're paid, but our officers and our leadership are unpaid.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to continue that way, at least for the foreseeable future. We're about to introduce a new initiative called MySafe California. MySafe California will provide a lot of the resources that MySafe LA has delivered in Los Angeles on a statewide level. And that means that rural fire departments, volunteer fire departments, small agencies will be able to gain access to a lot of the technology and a lot of the materials and education pieces that we develop, and they can have it customized to represent their own department. at no cost to them. And I think that's a really important kind of next step. Beyond that, we're looking at several smaller communities. We're actually engaged in some real active conversations with some smaller departments, Washington State, a larger department in Illinois, and we're looking at ways in which we can take our model here and replicate it in those areas. What's important to us is that there needs to be a real risk component. So in California, the statewide risk component is twofold: wildfire and earthquakes. So those are the two main focuses for MySafe California. And MySafe California will be different than MySafe LA in that it will be more of a resource portal at a train-the-trainer environment. We aren't anticipating for the first year that we will actually be going to schools, but we will be going to fire departments, and we will be helping them to get at least their internal mechanisms up and running. And by the way, guys, we're talking about some fairly large, you know, think of a city the size of Santa Monica that has an annual public education budget of $1,000. So they have no money to do this sort of thing. I wasn't speaking specifically for Santa Monica, but I was saying that, you know, overall, there are a lot of departments that have cities that are relatively that size, or that cover an area like Carmel Valley, where they just don't have any money and they've got tremendous risk. So that's what we're thinking about. If it's a big metro urban environment, then they've got to have people who are in that 20% metric of unprepared and unwilling, just in our smoke alarm installations, because that's one of the most important things that we're doing right now. Mm-hmm. And I should mention, by the way, that tomorrow we will be launching a new website called mysmokealarm.org. And mysmokealarm.org will allow families to register their homes as having working smoke alarms, will allow them to request smoke alarms, and to request, actually, just like you make an appointment to get your hair cut, you can make an appointment to have our installers come and install smoke alarms in your home. All
wow.
for free.
Wow.
So this is an important kind of thing to leave you with, is that we are going into homes and we are installing smoke alarms for people. We're doing it at no cost. If you call from the Pacific Palisades, we will be very disappointed in you because you can afford to buy your own smoke alarms. But if you are calling from other places and you need them, then we want to be able to be there to support you. So mysmokealarm.org will allow you to go register your home. You can actually sign up to be pinged, to test your alarm, to replace the batteries, to practice your family escape plan, to get all kinds of educational information. And I will tell you guys, when we go into some of these homes, I mean, the families are, I mean, they're just desperate just getting by and have maybe too many people living there. We've been in homes, you know, that are 1,000 square feet, and they've got grandparents and cousins and children, and everyone's packed in there trying to find a way to survive, and not one working smoke alarm. And when we go in there and we install them inside and outside of every bedroom, in the hallway, I mean, they're just, it's like Christmas for them. And it's the most basic, fundamental thing. And it makes us feel good to know that at least if something should go wrong, that they'll have some at least early warning to be able to get out and to stay alive.
Right.
Amen.
Amen.
What a way to end the show.
This is wonderful. So now I'll talk to the public information officer. Can you give us the contact information for Myself LA, MySafe California, Todd?
Yes. You can follow us via various social media avenues. Of course, it's www.mysafela.org. Or you can follow us on Twitter at MySafeLA, on Instagram at MySafeLA, MySafeLA, just MySafeLA, and then at Facebook.com/MySafeLA.org. Mm-hmm. So those are great ways to keep up with what we're doing. Also through there, you can request to be part of our email newsletter that we send out every month, and it's a good way to keep up to date on what we're doing, where we've been. You know, we try to do with lots of pictures and video links and things like that to entertain and to enlighten people. So you can follow us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. We have a monthly newsletter that you can sign up for, and of course, you can find all of our videos and all of our educational information at www.mysafela.org. So
and
check us out.
Is there an email, Todd?
Well, you can always email me at todd.lights, and that's L-E-I-T-Z, @mysafela.org. So it's todd.lights@mysafela.org, and I can pass it on to anybody within our organization. You can also call us if you, until we get the My Smoke Alarm website up and running, you can call us to request a smoke alarm installation at your home in the city of Los Angeles by just calling 213-634-0100 and then listen to the menu until it says, you know, to set up a smoke alarm installation appointment and hit that. So just leave us a message, and all we need is your phone number and an address, and we'll come out there and install up to 5 smoke alarms in your home, get you covered free of charge.
Perfect. Perfect. Well, thank
if
you. Yes, George.
We're talking, but this is within the city of Los Angeles.
Correct. It's within the city of Los Angeles.
Yes. Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
If you live in Manhattan Beach, go buy the smoke alarm, and if you do need help, you can contact us in our CERT organization. It's something we've discussed doing to be able to go out and help our seniors actually do installs also.
That's great. And one of the key parts of it, I think, is the coming of mysmokealarm.org will include the scheduling of a testing. And so that'll help people, remind people to schedule testing. And that's something that you guys can do, George, locally here, is help seniors test their smoke alarms, right?
Of course.
And by the way, registering and signing up for that, you could be anywhere to do that. The installations is the only thing that's limited to the city of LA. The rest of everything else that environment offers is available to anyone, anywhere.
Awesome. Thank you so much, gentlemen, Todd Lights and David Barrett of MySafe LA. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much.
It was wonderful. It was wonderful. Information-packed show, ladies and gentlemen. I hope that you will share this with everyone that you know, and get the word out to be safe. And also, please join us on Thursday for our Spotlight LA, Spotlight South Bay, and then, of course, on Friday at 8 o'clock a.m. for the Manhattan Beach 360. So we'll see you soon. Thanks, everyone. Thank you, George.
You are quite welcome.
And thank you, Jackie.
Always a pleasure, Joe.
All right. We'll see you again soon. Bye-bye.